Eichel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 56 in the series entitled The Non-Existence of Existence, recorded live at Eichel Menachem in Brooklyn, New York on the 15th of Tavis, 5759.
Good morning. I once heard about one of the Hasidic Rebbes who came home in a weather like this, and to his wife's astonishment, he was totally dry, without an umbrella. So she asked him, how do you manage to remain so dry? So he said, I walk between the drops. Very good. It's hard to find a space. It's all about the space. Chachma shebenefesh. In the beginning of Perek Chav, the Alter Rebbe began addressing Inyanu Mohus Achdusa Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The essence of the idea of Hashem's Achdus, of Hashem's unity, Hashem being called a Yachid U'Meyuchad, single and uniquely singular. The Alter Rebbe explained that Achdus Hashem, in its true sense of the term, does not only mean that Hashem is the exclusive God or creator of the universe, to exclude other deities, forces, authorities, and so forth, but as he put it, it means that Hu Levadei Hu Kamei Shehaya Kaidem Shenivra Ha'Olam Mamash, that He is still one alone, just as He was one alone prior to the creation of the world, which means that Achdus Hashem doesn't only negate the existence or the authority or the power of another deity, but rather excludes any other reality. Hashem is still alone as He was prior to the creation of the world. That was the point that we began addressing last week. Now let's continue. We started to learn, we'll repeat a few lines that we learned last week, just for clarity purposes.
Can I ask a question before you begin? No. That would mean that everything that is, an illusion. I mean, it's here, but it's not here. And that behind all of this is like one sweet.
Does that mean you're asking that everything that is here is an illusion, a dream, a fantasy? We are all master.
Yeah.
Dreamers, fantasizers, experiencing an extraordinary hallucination that's lasting for the past close to 6,000 years. No, that's not what it means. Are you glad or are you disappointed? So what does it mean? That's a good shaila. This is what we will address today, indeed.
Yeah, our perception. Okay.
A little patience. We'll begin with the The last word on page 50, Daf Chafei Amid Beis, ki. Ki, because Eilam Haza, this world, V'chein Kala Eilam Eshal Yeinim, and likewise all the supernal worlds, Einam Poyalim Shum Shinui Ba'achdus Yisbarech, do not effect any change in his unity, Bihi Bara Me'ayin Liyesh, by their having been created out of a state of nothingness. Shekimoy Shahayohu Levadehu, just as Hashem was one alone, Yachidu Meyuchad, single and uniquely singular, Kaidim Hibaram, before they were created, Cain the same, Hu Levadehu, he is one alone, Yachidu Meyuchad, single and uniquely singular, Achar Shabaram, after he created them. And Alter Rebbe explains, how can we say such a statement? Hashem has brought in an entire universe, an entire existence into being. So pre-creation, he was obviously Yachidu Meyuchad, because nothing else existed. But post-creation, Hashem himself was involved in creating a huge universe with all its details, aspects, dimensions, and so forth. So the Alter Rebbe explains, Mishum, because the Kula Kamei Kalei Chashev, all is as naught beside him, Ucha'ayin Ve'efes Mamish, as if it was absolutely naught and nothing, absolutely non-existent. And the Alter Rebbe explains, Ki, because Ishavus Kala'ilam Esalyeinim V'tachteinim, the coming into being of all the upper and lower worlds, Me'ayin liyesh, from a state of nothingness into a state of somethingness, v'chayusam v'kiyumam, and their life and their existence, hamekayimam, which sustains them, shalayach zeruliyis ayin v'efes kishaya, so that they do not revert to nothingness and naught, as they were before they were created, Einoi Ela Dvar Hashem Veruach Pivyiz Baruch, is nothing other than the word of Hashem and the breath of his mouth, Hamalubash Bahem, that is clothed in these worlds. So he's saying that the creation of all of the worlds, both this world, the lower world, and as well as the higher supernal worlds, their creation and their being brought in from nothingness into a state of somethingness, A, as well as, he continues, their continuous life force and existence and vitality that keeps on creating them and giving them sustenance and vitality so that they should not revert to a state of nothingness. All of this is nothing but the Dvar Hashem, the utterance, the word of Hashem and the breath of his mouth, which is enclosed in them and all these worlds and existences to create them, both for the first time they were created and to continuously sustain them and to create them. As I mentioned last week, here in brief words, the Alter Rebbe prefaces to his explanation in chapter 20 what he elaborated upon in great detail and length in the second section of Tanya, the portal of unity and faith, Shara Yichud Ve'amuna. It's after this preface that he continues to develop the new idea which he wants to articulate and convey in these chapters 20 and 21 of Tanya. But in order to understand the new contribution of this chapter, we must elaborate for a few moments on the prefacing words, which he elaborates not here but in Shara Yichud Ve'amuna, and here is mentioned in a very concise and brief fashion in the lines that we just learned. As someone mentioned very well last week, the Hasidic tradition that Alter Rebbe wrote Shara Yichud Ve'amuna prior to Likutei Amarim, the second section prior to the first section, which we mentioned last week, and that would perhaps explain his being content with giving such few words, such concise words, to this axiom, which must serve as a foundation and a preface to the continuation of the idea which he develops in these chapters. The second section of Tanya, Shar HaYichud Ve'amuna, begins with a fascinating interpretation of the Baal Shem Tov, whom the Alter Rebbe used to call his Zayda, his spiritual Zayda. The Magid, the Mezritcher Magid, his Rebbe would call his father. And the Baal Shem Tov, he would call his Zayde, his spiritual grandfather, being the Rebbe of his Rebbe. Pardon? Did the Alter Rebbe know the Baal Shem Tov? The Alter Rebbe met the Baal Shem Tov once as a child of 3 years old. His father, Reb Baruch, the Alter Rebbe's father, Reb Baruch, brought him for his upshernish to the Baal Shem Tov. There was a tradition that the Baal Shem Tov told his father then that he should not bring him back to him again. So that was the only time the Alter Rebbe saw the Baal Shem Tov. One of the reasons given for that is that that might have affected and impacted the relationship between the Alter Rebbe and the Maggid. Because, you know, you can't put your soul in two places. And you can't give your soul away to two people. There was a chassid, his name was Rabbi Kusieli Epler. He was a great Chabad chassid. And the Alter Rebbe gave him a blessing for long life. He lived to be over 100. So he was a chassid of the Alter Rebbe, and then was a chassid of the Alter Rebbe's son, the Mittler Rebbe, the second Rebbe in the Chabad dynasty. After the Mittler Rebbe's passing, he was a chassid of the Tzemach Tzedek. And after the Tzemach Tzedek passed away, he was still alive. And the fourth Rebbe was the Rebbe Maharab, Reb Shmuel, the youngest son of the Tzemach Tzedek. And he refused to go to him. So they said, why don't you go to him? He says, I'll tell you. A person operates on five levels of consciousness. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, Yechida. He says, my Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, I gave away to the Alter Rebbe. My Chaya, I gave away to the Mittler Rebbe. My Yechida, I gave away to the Tzemach Tzedek. I have nothing else to give. So the Alter Rebbe begins Shara Yichud V'Hamuna with this fascinating interpretation of the Baal Shem Tov on the verse in Tehillim, Perek Kuf Yutes, La'olam Hashem Dvarcha Nitzav Bashamayim. Forever, O God, your word stands firm in the heavens. What does that mean? The Baal Shem Tov explains this. In fact, it has a source already in Medrash. But the Baal Shem Tov really elaborated and expounded on the point and made it a cornerstone in his philosophical theology and approach to life, that the word which you uttered, La'olam Hashem Dvarcha, the word Dvarcha which you uttered, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, Yehira Kiya B'Sai Chamayim, discussed in the beginning of Parshas Bereishis, those very words and letters through which the heaven was created initially, those words and letters stand forever within the firmament, within the heaven, always clothed within the heavens to sustain them and to give them life. So, La'olam Hashem, forever, O God, Dvorcha, your original utterances which brought the heavens into being, Nitzav Bashamayim, did not create the heavens and depart, but they always stand in the heavens and clothed within them to sustain them and give them continuous existence and vitality. And the Alter Rebbe continues, for if the creative letters were to depart, even for an instant, from the heavens, all of them would become naught, absolute nothingness, non-existence, as if they have never existed at all. And he goes on to explain that this is true not only concerning the heavens, but concerning the entire universe, and everything, every detail contained within the universe, all which were created through the Asara Ma'amaris, through the 10 general utterances through which Hashem created the world, articulated in Parshas Bereishis, as you mentioned earlier. They were created through divine speech. Now, when we say divine speech, obviously, this is a metaphor for a certain type of energy, a certain form of energy, which we will discuss later. The Alter Rebbe will discuss this at length, what this form of energy indicates, what this metaphor of speech indicates. But it's a certain form of energy. And this energy created the world, and is constantly creating and sustaining the universe and giving it continuous life and existence. Without that happening, the entire world and everything living in it would return to a state, Alter Rebbe says, of pure nothingness, as it was lifnei sheishis yimei bereishis mamish, as it was prior to the 6 days of creation. In the second chapter of Shara Yichud V'Emunah, the Alter Rebbe takes this idea and addresses the idea known in philosophical terms as deism. Deism is the doctrine that Hashem indeed created the world. The world has a primary source, which you might call God. He established its rules and its natural laws, but then He leaves it alone. He has better, more important, more exciting things to do. So He goes on to do His own business, so to speak. He created the world, He put it into motion, He created the rules, and that's it. Based on these rules, this Sunday morning experiences a powerful, extraordinary rain, and all the other things that take place in our universe on a day-to-day basis. The Alter Rebbe says they are making a basic error in their understanding of what creation is all about, and in their comparison which they make between human creativity and divine creativity. So the whole image of a world created and then abandoned by its creator is based, he says, on a false analogy to begin with. On an analogy which is an error, a comparison, an equation, which, as he puts it, equates the work of the creator of heaven and earth, l'maisa enesh v'tachbolaisav, to the work of man and his schemes. When the silversmith, the Alter Rebbe says, has completed fashioning a vessel, that vessel is no longer dependent upon him. So why not say the same concerning the entire universe? If you bring into the silversmith's factory a block, beautiful block of silver, he fashions it into a beautiful candelabra or any other silver vessel, he concludes fashioning it into that form, and he can abandon it. And it will exist as long as it exists without him. Without him continuously retaining and upholding that form. So why not say the same about Hashem's universe? Obviously, He fashioned the universe, He brought it into being, He established its rules, and that's it. Vaitigangin, as they say, He goes on. Here, the Alter Rebbe makes the distinction, the fundamental distinction between two concepts, which are central to Jewish philosophy, and are central to Jewish mysticism, particularly the Chabad school of thought, one called Yesh Miyesh, and the other called Yesh Miayin. Yesh Miyesh means something from something, versus Yesh Miayin, which is something from nothing. Creating something, Yesh Miyesh, creating an entity, in a fashion which we call Yesh Miyesh, something from something, is the general perception that we human beings have of things coming into being. That is what we are accustomed to. A chicken which comes into being is something from something. It has a preface, it has a foundation, it has an antecedent, an egg. A table is something from something. Lumber comes from lumber, and the lumber is something from something, coming from a forest. And the same is true with everything in the universe, which apparently runs by the order of cause and effect. There's a cause and there's an effect, and the effect has a cause following it, and that has an effect following that, and so forth. But ultimately, you can trace back every entity, dynamic, event, phenomenon, creature, to a previous source to a previous cause, which can in turn be traced back to a previous cause and so forth. Whenever anything is created, something from something, it means that essentially what the person did was he revealed the potential that existed in this something previously to him doing it. He did something which is consistent with the yesh, with the object that he is dealing with. He created something out of something else which lent itself to be created this way. A block of silver lends itself to be formed in all types of forms. A piece of lumber, a log, lends itself to be formed in various forms. Among them, a vessel, a bookcase, a chair, a table, and so forth. So the human being, what he did essentially was, he didn't create something new. He revealed a potential which existed previously in this log, in this piece of wood, and brought out something which is consistent with its properties, something that is consistent with its nature. Therefore, the Alter Rebbe says, Yesh Miyesh does not require the continuous involvement, creation, skills of the fashioner, of the builder, of the architect, of the blacksmith, of the silversmith, whatever it may be. But even after the smith leaves and abandons the vessel that he formed so beautifully and so forth, it will still exist and it will still survive. You'll say, without him, this would have never come into being. True. But since the smith took one yesh, took one something, and made out of it another yesh, another something, there was no essential difference, there was no essential variation change, there was no muhusdike transition. It was just a form, it was just a transition in form, which is consistent with the original matter, with the original yesh. Yesh meyayin, something from nothing, is totally different. In ayin, does there exist a potential for yesh? Does nothingness carry within itself the potentiality for somethingness? If nothingness would carry in itself the potentiality for nothingness, it would not be nothing. True nothingness means that it's nothing. You see, when we say something from nothing, nothingness, we don't really have a perception of what nothingness means. We interpret nothingness as space. Space is not nothingness. Space is a powerful somethingness. Air is something, and space is something, and location is somethingness, and even time is somethingness. So we interpret Yesh Meyayin that Hashem had this huge vacuum, this huge space, and He took the world, and He entered in it, He placed the world into that space. Space is also something created. Space is also Yesh Meyayin. Ayin is a state where the world did not exist in any form or fashion. No potential for it, even. The creation of Yesh Meyayin is not that there was a certain state which Hashem fashioned into another state. Ayin means a state where there was no potentiality for the world. It's not that Hashem revealed something that existed before, developed something, articulated something, fashioned and formed something into a state of Yesh. The whole existence of something which is Yesh Meayin relates solely to the Creator. He created it. Creation Meayin Liyesh, from nothing into something, refers and relates only and exclusively to the power of the Creator. Because through His infinite power, He has the ability indeed to create something new. Hence, it's obvious that His power and His force is required continuously if we want this to exist. Yeah, very good. Ultimately, you come back to a something. As abstract, as refined, as confusing and complex as that something may be, we ultimately come back to a state of somethingness. Indeed, according to most philosophies, that somethingness is ultimately at the root of everything. Which means we never take out creation and development of creation from the realm of Yesh Miyesh. the first something might be chemicals, might be certain forms of energy, but it's something. And we call it something from something because it has some similarity to the effect. Even the most primary cause, as refined as it may be, as complex and abstract as it may be, has a certain similarity in its properties, in its dimensions, in its function, in its personality, so to speak, to the last chain of events. To the last effect in the final, in the end of the chain of events. And that's what we call something from something. The last something and the first something have some similarity, and therefore you could say this came from this. Even the creationists, even the philosophies that apparently believe in creation, which means that Hashem brought the first being into existence, what is this reality that we define as God? Very often it's also as a something. It's a God that has similar properties to us. Wiser than us, better than us, more complete than us. But it's us in a most complete fashion. And that's still something from something. Yiddishkeit, the Torah believes in Yesh Me'ayin, in something from nothing, and this changes everything. This is what the Alter Rebbe says. Now, what does this mean? This is quite apparently an abstract concept. So I want to share with you two metaphors, two examples. One is an example that's discussed quite frequently in later Hasidic discourses based on that section of Tanya, and is an example which is itself somewhat abstract. So before we do that example, let's preface another example.
I mean, Hashem is filling the world.
No.
And only the Levadim. So the Ayin is also His.
You're saying, why do you call it Ayin? You're asking, why do we call Hashem Ayin? If it comes all from Hashem, He's not nothing, He's something. That's a very good question. We'll address it in the continuation of the class. The closest example, perhaps, that we can get in our world to something from nothing. And again, this analogy is incomplete, but it has very interesting and powerful parallels to Hashem's creation, something from nothing, is what we might call creative human thought. Imagination, if you wish, daydreaming. Let's examine this. You're experiencing a very boring moment, say a faculty meeting. In your office. It's just as boring as it gets. Let's say a shiur. You're sitting at a shiur, it's very boring. And you begin daydreaming. What do you do when you daydream? You begin imagining and creating certain realities in your mind. Two examples. You create in your mind an international conference, an international scientific conference that you will be visiting in 3 weeks, and you will be presenting a paper at that conference. You see the thousands of people there. All the delegates are there. You're walking, you're meeting people. You see yourself being called up to the podium. You presented the paper. You're hearing the deafening applause that you received after the paper, that even the greatest critics and scientists had to confess to its brilliance and greatness and so forth. And you're walking out and you already hear the questions and the compliments and the feedback and so forth. You already have yourself back on the plane in a good mood and then coming back home and telling your wife how successful you were. And so on and so forth. And this is all going on in this boring faculty meeting or in the shiur, and it's mamash happening and it's alive in your mind. What happened now? You created a whole world. You created a space that's not existing. You populated the space with myriads and myriads of people. You made them say things and think things and so on and so forth. In a sense, this is called creation, something from nothing. You did not create it something from something. The only antecedent, the only foundation that this population and existence has is your will is your imagination, is your thought process. Okay, one sec. We're not talking about a dream. We're talking about a conscious creation. Good. That's where it sees. That's where the analogy ceases. You're saying you're creating because you're already familiar with what people look like, with what conferences look like, with what compliments look like, with what applause look like, with what exciting speeches look like. Right. Very good. A peasant in Central America would have never left the village, would have never contrived such schemes. His imaginations would be different. That's where the analogy that's where the effect and the meticulousness of this analogy falls short. But we'll address that in a moment. Let's talk about the positive similarities. In a sense, you're right. You cannot say it's something from nothing, but similar. If we compare it to a table from a piece of wood, a candelabra from a block of silver, a chicken from an egg, we call it something from nothing. Now you might object immediately and say, how can you compare this to the creation of the world? Over there, nothing was created. Nothing was created. These people weren't brought into being. Nothing from nothing. It's not something from nothing. These people were brought into being. They have a substance of their own. They have an independent reality. They have no reality save your imagination. So you'll say, this is something. There is nothing independent from your imagination here. And that's precisely the story of creation. That is precisely that is what something from nothing means. We are usually totally insensitive to what's going on in our creation, totally apathetic to its real implications and consequences. That's what something from nothing means. Something from something, the thing inherently exists even before it was brought out by the smith, by the creator, by the fashioner, by the designer. That's what something from something means. A God which is similar to his creation existed in God. So after it's brought out, there are two realities. There is the creator and there is the creation. Before it wasn't here, something from something means that in some form, in some fashion, it has a legitimate validity. It has an intrinsic reality, being, significance, value. In this case, it's fascinating. No one would attribute reality to those thousands of people that are living, functioning, thinking, operating in my mind, in my wonderful, pleasant daydream that I experience so often. Why is that? That's the first cloud, the first axiom that defines something from nothing. Something from nothing means that the something is not coming from somewhere. There was no potential revealed. There was no potential developed, articulated, and so forth. It means that the whole reality can be attributed solely, exclusively to the creator of it, to the imaginator, to the daydreamer, to the fantasizer. That's what something from nothing means. Something from nothing is not to be attributed to the thing, because the thing is not coming from anywhere. The thing has no antecedent, has no foundation, has no preface, introduction, cause, and so forth. Rather, I have the power to create something anew, and therefore the whole reality, as beautiful, as magnificent, and as powerful, and as extraordinary, and as amazing it may be, should be attributed solely to the imaginator. And it's fascinating because, you know, in this pleasant daydream that we have, we have all these thousands of people. If one guy is making you upset, you don't have to contrive schemes to get rid of him and devise circumstances to eradicate him. You just stop thinking about him and he's not there. You don't have to do anything to get him out of there, because you have to do something to get him there. Now let's come to the Nimshel for a moment. This is the story of our creation. The world and everything contained in the world is not yesh me yesh, it's yesh me ayin. It's something from nothing. And all the issues that were discussed before in the metaphor exist in regarding the relationship between Hashem and the universe, and in even a more powerful way. And what we want to discuss here is two points. Are you going to ask me a question? Even when the imaginator ceases to imagine his world that he created, that world should still exist without him. Would anyone present that theory and that possibility? No. Why should it exist without him? It never existed without him. So you want when he... You'll say there was such a beautiful world going on. So when I finish imagining, it should still continue. There was nothing there to continue. The whole thing was about your imagination. It was about your thought. So as long as you are actively willing, consciously willing and contriving that world in your mind, contriving the creation of that world in your mind, it will exist. When that ceases, it will cease to exist naturally. Again, the chiddush is not that it doesn't exist. The chiddush is that it does exist. That's A. And B, I want to ask you a question. Was the person's aloneness compromised by this imagination? Aloneness. Did he become less alone? Are you going to say he's not one person, he's two people? There was someone else brought into his life as a result of this imagination? Why? Because this whole reality that he built up with thousands of people is solely and exclusively to be attributed to his reality. It's all about him. Obviously, it serves as emotional. Again, here the analogy is incomplete. I didn't mean aloneness as a psychological state. We contrive these daydreams in order to serve our emotional and psychological needs. When you're sitting at a boring lecture, you become desperate. This is what you do. Huh? We're talking about the multiplicity of it, not the emotional issues. Huh? He's just still the same alone. There are thousands of people now. It's yesh miayin. It's not yesh miyash. You're asking if that is what creation is all about, making energy into matter. That would be some form of something from something. Let's talk now about what happens by creation. You're addressing your question. What happens by creation? More or less, with many differences, which will also be addressed soon, this is what happens. In the metaphor, we used man's man's creative thought process, his power of imagination, of daydreaming, and so forth. Concerning creation, we call it Hashem giving a speech. And we'll see the reason why don't we call it Hashem imagining or thinking. Because calling it a speech allows the created reality perceive itself in a different way. We don't perceive reality in this way. If creation would be only about his thought process, those people who are being envisioned in your mind never can perceive themselves as an autonomous reality outside of you. For all practical purposes, they didn't even know that you dreamt about them. In Hashem's case, it's not the case. We can stroll the face of this earth for 80, 90 years and not even dream once that this is all about godliness. So that's why we call the divine speech, because a speech has that dual identity to it, which we will address. But that was just a parenthetical insight why in the Nimshel I'm changing it from thought to speech. But let's go back to the metaphor and apply that to creation. Creation is something from nothing, which means that the world had no source whatsoever. It's not that Hashem took a certain energy or certain chemicals, which by virtue of their identity, their quality, their dimensions, their properties, and so on and so forth, their genetic makeup and chemistry, they lend themselves to be developed into the world which we inhabit. That's not what happened. In its purest form, there is an infinite gap between the Creator and creation. It's not like the world can be traced back all the way to its Creator, and there we will have it in an undeveloped form, but some type of world will be there. No. Yesh Miyayin means that Hashem Himself is totally beyond any dimension of the universe. He cannot be defined as a source to the universe. He does not have one property or one dimension which justifies us to sketch a similarity and identify Him as the cause of this type of universe. And that is the reason why we call it Ayin. Because empirically, something we have no relationship to, we call nothingness. Although that's the real somethingness. So from our perception, we call it nothingness, because the something cannot be traced back to its source. That's what we mean, something from nothing. Of course Hashem created it. But the something cannot be found in its source in any way. So Hashem creates a world something from nothing because He could create it. Just like the human being that you created in your imagination cannot be found in your imagination. Here is where the similarity is a justified similarity. As sophisticated as you will become, as a good fantasier as you are, fantasier means a powerful power of fantasy, which characterized the Jewish people from the days of old. Yosef Bala Chalemus. Hayinu Kechayelman. As fantastic as you are in the field of drama and fantasy and creativity and imagination and so forth, you could never identify your imagination as the source of those people walking the corridors of the International Scientific Conference. It's to be attributed to your imaginary powers. You have a power to contrive such a powerful situation. Hashem has a power to create a universe. To create something new. What do we mean by new? New doesn't mean that it wasn't conspicuous before. New means that it had no preface whatsoever. Even the most abstract and undefined preface. That is what new means. Hence, the two logical conclusions of such a type of creation. A, continuous creation is a necessity. That's what Alter Rebbe says. He says the deists are not making a parenthetical philosophical mistake. They don't understand what creation is all about. If it's Yesh Me'ayin, Hashem has to constantly create the universe. It's not about 50, where are we holding? 57, 59 years ago, 5,759 years ago, Hashem created a universe. A powerful world with galaxies, with planets, with human beings, with vegetation, with minerals. Every single aspect that our universe contains, He established the laws and fine. That's not what creation is. If it's something from nothing, there is constantly at every moment, a godly force that is continuously bringing the world into being. Just as, again, in the metaphor of the imaginator, you're going to say, you imagine the world to be in your mind, and then you leave, you go on, and it still exists. If its existence would be contributed to its own identity, new, you began it and you left. You began the process, you unleashed the ball and you left. Existence as an independent reality never occurred to begin with. It was all about your power. It was all about your imagination. So if you do not continuously bring it into being, that would automatically cease to exist. So Yesh Me'ayin necessitates and requires Hashem's continuous creating force, Hashem's continuous creative power and energy to bring the world into existence. He has to speak the world constantly. He has to give the speech at every moment. Naturally, we assume that if nothing out of the ordinary happens, the sun will still be here in 5 minutes. Actually, today is a bad day for that metaphor. The rain will be here in 5 minutes. If nothing out of the ordinary happens. It's not the case. The exact opposite is true. If nothing out of the ordinary happens, the sun will not be here in 5 minutes. If nothing out of the ordinary happens, nothing will be here in 5 minutes. Even 5 minutes won't be here. Ariel asked the question, the sun has such a long, glorious, magnificent history. And there are natural laws that cause the sun to be here. That's all true. But the natural laws themselves won't be here in 5 minutes if nothing out of the ordinary happens. They themselves have to constantly be brought into being by Hashem's creative power. Remember, there was once a debate in yeshiva when we were young bachim, young children by mitzvah age. If Hashem wants to get rid of the world, what does He have to do? What does He have to do? What do you think? If Hashem wants to get rid of the world. So one guy... And even if he wants to get rid of the world, I mean, how long will it take him? What does he need? Okay, today with the nuclear age, maybe it can be done faster. Chas v'shalom. But what does he have to do? So one guy said, well, a major fire, you know, children, a major fire, and it burned the whole world. So there were two problems. First of all, water. There's so many seas and oceans. And second of all, ashes. The guy said, okay, he'll take the ashes and place them in the water, in the seas. But what do we do with all the water? So the water he'll have to dry with a lot of fire. But there's so much water. No, he was struggling. Doesn't know. What does Hashem have to do to get rid of the world? Nothing. He has to do nothing. He has to do something in order to get this world into existence. That's what Yesh Me'ayin is all about. You see, Yesh Me'ayin, again, we are so much a product of the Yesh that we fail to perceive what is going on in our world. So when it comes to a daydream, it's obvious to everyone that it has no reality of its own. It's obvious that no being can be attributed to that large population we envision in our mind. When it comes to the world, it seems so real. It seems so alive. That's why Hashem is such an artist, like we spoke about last week. How do we then define Teva and Lamaila Mina Teva? Nature and miracles. See, this approach of Yesh Me'ayin and its logical conclusions also brings us to understand something about miracles. A lot of people are uncomfortable with the concept of miracles, beginning with the miracles of Torah. Come on, it's enough that there's a God who created the universe. Where does a miracle come into the picture? In fact, in the later centuries, even in the Orthodox world, there rose up many, you might call them apologetics and so forth, from people who are known to be from the apologetic school of thought, so to speak, which try to rationalize miracles and give them a rational explanation consistent with the laws of nature. Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, which was introduced into modern physics merely approximately 50 or 60 years ago, created very powerful possibilities to explain many of the miracles in Torah, beginning from Kriyas Yamsuf and so forth, based on modern physics, based on indeterminism and so on and so forth. Now, not getting into the actual issue and so forth, the Alter Rebbe says in chapter 2 of Shaar HaYichud, from the above-mentioned perspective, it's obvious that essentially there's no difference between a miracle and nature. Because Hashem is involved at every moment in recreating the laws of nature, which inherently do not exist. So the Alter Rebbe says, this tells us that if someone believes in creation, in the very concept of creation, the Isis and Maivsim Shabbatayra, the miracles in Torah and the continuous generations, are inherent to the very principle of creation, something from nothing. It's no bigger chiddush and no lesser chiddush. So the Baal Shem Tov says, what's the difference between Teva and Lamayla Min HaTeva? What's the difference between a miracle and nature? You know what the Baal Shem Tov says? A nature is a miracle that happens frequently. Sachakel. It's always happening. Imagine the sun would rise once in a lifetime. Imagine, well, how the world would turn over. The sun would rise once in a lifetime. Like Hale Bopp's comet. Once in 70 years, I think. Huh? Last time it was in 86, another 70 years. Everyone, we just had, what was the comet? Halley's comet, once in 4,000 years, huh? Imagine the sun would rise once in a lifetime. No one would be sitting here now. We would all be watching what's going on. So it happens every day. The Baal Shem Tov says that's a miracle. It's just a frequent miracle. But the world essentially is a miracle happening. If it would be something from something, that would not be the case.